I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Bob Kronbauer joins me again, the founder and editor-in-chief of Vancouver's Awesome. He's also the Leo Award-nominated host of TELUS Optics' BC Was Awesome, which has just begun its second season. The series sees Bob traveling the province, rediscovering our history through the larger-than-life characters and fascinating places that make British Columbia interesting and, yes, remarkable. This past summer, Bob sold Vancouver's Awesome to Glacier Media. They own a lot of the weekly papers in the city, like The Courier, West Ender, Business in Vancouver, and the North Shore News, among many other titles. We'll discuss BC Was Awesome, Vancouver's Awesome, and more. At Bob Kronbauer is the Twitter handle, and vancouverisawesome.com is the website for more. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Bob Kronbauer. Mr. Kronbauer, good morning.
Hello. Man, I love your intros.
I need to take a breath after, and then hopefully the guest says something.
How often do they say, thank you for the kind intro? This is so thoughtful. That's fantastic.
That happens frequently, it's my only chance to really write other than tweet nowadays.
Yeah.
And Charlie Rose does these long intros, so I figure if he does it, I can do that, right?
Sure. It's longer than 280 characters.
That's true. Yeah. Are you one of those?
No. Are you?
No. I'd like to keep it to 140.
I like the challenge of it.
Really?
To keep it. Yeah.
Yeah. And but what I think would be great is just an edit button, and we have that on Facebook. That if we edit whatever, people can see our edits.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that's just an equally. I mean, that would be great if we had that on Twitter.
If you had it that said you've edited it, sure.
Yeah, and then, I mean, they have apps where you can see what people deleted, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, what difference does it make, as Hillary Clinton would say? Vancouver's Awesome began when?
February 14th, 2008. It was a Valentine's Day card to the city.
So it's almost 10 years.
Going on 10, yeah.
Yeah, and you've taken it from... Well, just a blog, right? That's mm-hmm. how it started, and
yeah.
Now it's this business that you've sold off this summer. But you're still continuing with it. You've got a desk at Glacier, and you're working there, right?
Yeah. So I'm at their office at 303 West Fifth Ave. My business card says editor in chief. I'm more of general manager / editor in chief because I'm still managing the business side of it. And it's been fantastic. It's been about a month.
Well, one would think that's something that you've created from the ground up. That's become such a part of people's lives. I mean, whether people love it or hate it, I mean, it's a hashtag on Twitter and Instagram and the sort. One would think that it would be hard to part with it. I mean, you haven't really parted with it, but I mean, you're one guy amongst many now rather than the guy.
Right. I mean, it is my baby, and it will always be my baby, and I'll always be the founder of it. And, big thing in the deal was that I was going to stay on. It wasn't just, okay, here it is, blah, blah, here we go, it's gone, I'm out of here, I'm taking a big purse of money and hitting the road. I'm staying on board, I'm still guiding the ship, and that's people have asked me that, like, is it bittersweet, you don't own it anymore, but mm-hmm. I had taken it to a point, I'd been running it as a business for probably 8 years, a couple years after we started it really turned into a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had taken it as far as I could on my own as a one man shop, as the single full time employee with a bunch of part timers, and my business acumen could only take it so far. So to bring it under Glacier and have the resources and the manpower and everything that they've got there, it's amazing. I love it.
I don't care about money, but I think people listening to us do. And through all the things that I've read about this sale. No one's talked about money. Was it a big purse of money?
That's a funny question. I wasn't expecting that question.
And I don't think a lot of the people talking to you thought of asking you this,
no,
did they?
No. In private conversations, people haven't even asked me that. Let's just say I'm happy with the deal.
Yeah. Now, we'll talk about what this thing was in a sec, but what's come out of it, I think, is fascinating. And BC Was Awesome.
Yeah.
I think as I told you before we started, I've seen the segments. Is that what we call them, segments or
yeah,
shows?
Yeah, they're segments. Sometimes we'll call them episodes. They're short though, so they're more like segments.
Yeah, they're about 5-6 minutes or so.
Yeah,
and they've taken you throughout the province, and they're just wonderful because we get to learn about history that we probably didn't know before, and certainly get to meet people that we ought to know. that are such a part of this province.
Yeah, the goal is to find odd stories, offbeat, you know, stories that you weren't taught in school for the most part, and maybe sometimes if you were a different version of that story that you might not have learned.
And so the only way that people can see this is if you get your cable through TELUS, right?
Yeah, so
I'm a Shaw subscriber, so the only way I could have seen it is on your site or on YouTube.
Yeah, so as a TV show, in quotations, it's on TELUS's on-demand system. So if you have TELUS cable, you can watch episodes on there. Search BC Was Awesome. Or we have it for free on our Facebook page. Or if you go to actually bcwasawesome.com, all the episodes are available for free there.
And so how did it begin for you? I mean, I know you have a very keen interest in history and the outdoors, and so this is just a perfect fit for you. But how did you get to the point where this becomes a thing, a show, essentially?
Yeah. So we did Vancouver Was Awesome, was the first book that we released with Arsenal Pulp Press, and Lanny Russworm wrote that. And it made
great
it to
book,
number two.
Yeah.
I bet you've talked to him about that.
Yeah, he was in here for cool. that, yeah. Great.
And made it to number two on the BC bestsellers list. So Arsenal Pulp was like, oh, let's do a follow-up. Let's do a BC book, a sort of broader-reaching book. And at the time, this was a couple years ago, you know, I was on board 100%. And we were looking for somebody to write it. And we were like, okay, who's the perfect person to write this? Like, who can we find? And talked to a few people and didn't really find a great fit. And then I was sitting there. I was like, Jesus, what an opportunity this is for me. Like, I would be kicking myself in 10 years if I didn't jump at the opportunity to write this thing. Because, A, like you say, I'm keenly interested in the history of our province. B, I love to travel around it and explore it and share that with people. And so I decided I was going to write it. And then a friend of mine who I used to share an office with was like, oh, you should turn this into a TV show. This would be a great show. You know, like these segments, because in the book, you know, in the Vancouver book, as you have read, it's one photo with a couple paragraphs. And it's like, here's something strange that you probably didn't know. And so that was the idea, was to take that and expand on it, you know, do segments, take 5 minutes to really dig into these BC stories. And so anyways, we pitched it to TELUS. The first season, and they were like, cool. They funded it, and then we pitched a second season, because the first season did really well online. We got, I don't know, 500,000 views on it.
I remember seeing people sharing it and things like that, and I knew then that it was a big deal.
That's when you know something is good. Yeah, like you can get as many impressions on something as you like, but until people start actually sharing it, I think that's the goal for us, is to make stuff that people actually care about and think is good enough to post on their own wall.
Yeah. So. Had you done television before?
No. I'd done radio. Yeah. I had a segment on The Peak for 7 years where I would talk about all things awesome for 1 minute a week.
Yeah, because I'm watching it, and I think, not to patronize you, you're good on TV.
Oh, thanks.
And, you know, I guess I didn't expect it because I know you from Facebook and Twitter and you know, your posts on Vancouver's Awesome. That and I think the people in the television community agree, because you were nominated this year, were you not, for the show?
Yeah, so I was nominated for best host of a lifestyle and documentary. Sophie Louis won it.
Oh, there you go.
Wow. She's actually good.
She is, isn't she?
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, when I watch her on television, because I've been watching her on TV for a long time. A lot of these people on television, they look younger than you know, because I kind of know how old they are, because you know, I grew up watching them, say, at the end of high school.
Right.
And they look younger than, say, I do. Or, you know what I mean?
It's just,
I guess that's TV. That's show business, right?
Totally, yeah.
So how do you, as I said, there were about 5-6 minutes a segment. How do you go about doing the production of it? I mean, it must take a while.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is what's been so great is the production company that actually does all of the heavy lifting. It's called Artaban Productions. It's run by a guy named Greg Crompton, who's my director this season, was co-directing last season. And, you know, I'll meet with them early on, and we sort of, you know, hash out a bunch of ideas, like leads that we've found, like, oh, we've this season it was, oh, there's this golden skull thing in Kamloops. Let's get to the bottom of that. And then we sort of pitch to each other in meetings for a month or so. And then after that, after we land on what we're going to go after, Greg and his team. Last year was a guy named Jesse Blaskowitz. This year it's Tony Tricello, does a ton of research, reaching out to people, calling people, producing it, you know, basically. And then we schedule a few trips. And they're so good at scheduling everything so that it's like everything just kind of falls into place. Like when we went to Kamloops to do the Golden Skull thing, we're at the museum, then we're out at this guy's house that has the skull, and then we're out at this weird dude's house that was searching for the skull for 20 years of his life, and greets us at the door in a bear costume and a bow and arrow, I basically just show up with a few questions and a basic idea of the story, because they've done so much research and they already know the story. Like, my director knows the story inside out.
Yeah.
And I show up with a basic understanding of it, and then I ask questions, and it's like you get these moments on camera of real discovery where it's like I'm actually learning this stuff.
Yeah.
And then passing it on to the viewer.
And when you are astonished by some tidbit of information, I mean, it shows through, right? You are expressive in that sense, which I find the enthusiasm for that shows even now, even though you've been interested in history for a long time. There's still a great deal to learn, right?
Oh, man, every time we sit in on something, if there's something weird that comes up, even if it's not to do with the subject that we're talking about, sometimes something weird will come out of the woodwork. It's like, what? And then that will lead to something in the next season even.
And you mentioned these folks that you work with, and they do all the technical things like
everything.
The animation, and
which is
actually quite clever when I saw that. The melancholy thing about it is, because some of the people that you talk to over these last couple of seasons now, a couple of them have passed on, right?
Yeah,
have died?
Yeah. Nadine Stark, actually.
That's the woman from Salt Spring.
Yeah, so right? She was, her family were some of the first black settlers that inhabited the island, and we went and visited her and heard her family history, and that was actually before season one came out. Her granddaughter reached out and she was like, Nadine's in the hospital. Could we see the episode before it comes out? Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh man. And so she actually got to see it before she passed away. But that was something that I thought about before we even started this show, but it sort of sinks in more as something similar happened this season where one of the subjects passed away before it came out. Is that, you know, a lot of these people are in their 90s. We went up in a Cessna with a guy that was 96, and he's driving the Cessna. And you know, I'm just thinking how lucky we are to be there with that person.
Yeah.
And even luckier to be able to share their story before it just disappears.
It does make the work of people that gather history more urgent, especially since the city, this province, is changing as quickly as it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish there were more things like what we're doing. Even not just a TV show. You know, there's a couple historical magazines that are great and historical societies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to see more history.
And it's stuff that, I mean, as you can attest through your hits and the sort and the viewership, people want to see.
Oh yeah, and that's the sort of pitch is with these stories. It's a history show for people who don't like history or who don't think that they're interested, like nerds like you and I that care about hey, let's dig back in this book written in 1960 about X random historical event, you know.
Uh-huh.
Presenting it in a way that's like, oh, this is interesting, and tying it to current day as well is really important for us.
Where have your travels taken you after all this time? I mean, you've been, I'm assuming you've been through every part of the province, but this province is so big that there's still more to see, right?
Oh, for sure. Season one took us to Vancouver Island, and we did some Lower Mainland stories and a little bit up in Kamloops. And then season two, we did a couple stories here, and then we went out to the Kootenays, far Kootenays, all the way to Fernie. We did a trip through Creston, Cranbrook, Fernie, where I actually hadn't been before.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do travel writing for our website too. So I do some travel stories. I still write those. So it was really cool to just see the province before we even dig into the stories. And then we went up to Kamloops, Clearwater, and all the way up to Fort St. John.
Fernie was the place, that's a city that a lot of people said was cursed, right?
Yes, that was the curse in quotations. Yes.
And what I liked about that segment was that you not only talked about how beautiful, and that's what we forget too, just how beautiful this place is, and not far from where we're sitting, we mm-hmm. can go out, and you do that on a regular basis. But you talk about the history of the social history and the myths that have come about. You know, the fact that the First Nations in that part of the world were blamed for the misfortune that befell Fernie for so many years.
We try any time that we're going to do a story that involves any Indigenous element, we try and work with them and get their permission. Like last season, we did the origin of Sasquatch, and we partnered. It is actually a partnership where we get their permission, we work with the band, and we get the real story out. And so the Stalis worked with us on that Sasquatch one and the Tanaha Nation. We wouldn't have done that for any Ghost Rider story if not for working with them, which has been an interesting experience because, you know, white crew, white host, not used to the sort of the speed at which sometimes things get done is a lot more deliberate, which is good and refreshing, but at times also frustrating because we're used to just, okay, make a decision, here it goes. It doesn't have to go through filters, layers of different people for approval. So this season there was actually one that fell through where in the end they were like, you know, we don't feel comfortable. We don't want you to tell the story this season. And we were like, okay, fine, and we just walked away from it. We're going to try and get it for next season, fingers crossed, because it's a really good story.
There will be a third season.
We're pitching it right now. We actually picked up a few extras for season two, so it's sort of season 2.1. We're going out to Penticton and Vernon to do five stories in December. What? And we're still rolling them out right now, too. There's still six left in this season.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to see them because they're just – yeah, they are interesting, and they're fascinating. The other thing that I was wondering when you're doing a show like this, there must be when you're doing, say, a segment on Salt Spring Island, you're there in Salt Spring for, what, a day or so?
Yeah.
You must come up with – six different ideas
for different stories,
for other stories to do.
Yeah.
And so how do you harness that, you know, your work so that you're able to do?
Well, it's all in advance, you know, so everything is planned. Like I said, the producer's not down to the minute, but to the hour, where it's like, okay, we're here, we're going to go see Nadine, and then we're going to her house, we're going to go here, we're going to get some B-roll. So it's easy to stay on track when we're there. It's the deciding beforehand that really is tough, like landing on which ones we're actually going to do before we step out of the car.
You must have just as many unproduced ideas for future seasons, right?
Reams, yeah.
So it takes your interest in history as well as your love for the outdoors and puts it together, because you do get into some adventures. Like I remember Nanaimo, for example.
They had the bathtub race.
Yeah, everybody talks about that. And you actually got to ride in one, right?
Almost sunk it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a moment in there, and there's so much stuff that gets left on the cutting room floor. As we were talking about before we turned the mics on, like, you wish they were longer. They're only 5 minutes. There are so many things that happen that are funny, or elements of a story that, you know, that aren't told, that are just like, oh, well, it's too long to break into that part about X, you know? Yeah. I'm struggling for an example, but yeah, one of the things was that I almost sunk in that bathtub. There's a point where I'm like pulling the motor and I'm kind of exhausted, and I yelled, "Fuck!" You might beep that out really loud, because I was just exhausted and dying, and like the boat is filling up with water, and I'm out there. There's cameras. There's like, oh, painful. But anyways, that doesn't make it in. That's not something that I think should get left in. But there's a lot of fun stuff that happens on the way.
And all these places that you go to, there are museums, right? And there are people that will tell you their story if you ask.
Oh, man, totally, yeah.
We don't think of certain cities that you've been to as places to go for touristy stuff. I mean, you go there for, you know, adventure or whatever, but you don't...
Fort St. John, yeah, would you think...
Any museums there,
Preston?
Or anything? Yeah. But there are, and you meet some fascinating people.
Oh, my God, they're the best.
Who tell you the stories,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And they know these stories, the weird stories too. You know, we're digging for the offbeat stories, but the historians in the places will generally know them. And some of them are more common, like the Ripple Rock explosion is a story that everybody kind of knows.
Yeah. Back to Vancouver's Awesome. The selling of that, I think, brought you again to the attention of a lot of people in the media, because they wondered as to the future of, say, Glacier and what they were interested in doing. were they still interested in publishing newspapers, or were they wanting to go online, and they thought that, that buying Vancouver's Awesome was, say, a portent to their future in the media business.
Who do you mean?
Oh, where? People in the press.
Okay.
People in the media.
In the press club, specifically?
Is there a press club? I don't know. I think I'm a member, but I don't know if I'm able to confirm that.
Okay.
But there are a lot. There's a lot of chatter because, I mean, these are people who've been in, say, newspapers for most of their career.
Sure.
And they're wondering what the future of the business is. And this is, you know, this was a significant buy on their part. Do you have any insight as to the media landscape and what it'll look like 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road?
I don't see papers going away. I definitely think, obviously I'm biased in that I think it's a good move for Glacier to buy a digital-only property that has a large audience in the city and has a wide reach, and is a sort of jewel in the rough to turn into something bigger. And because, I mean, over the years, like when I first started talking to Glacier, it is a perfect fit in my eyes because what Vancouver is Awesome has turned into, even though it is still a lifestyle publication and we do mostly, you know, light, I'm going to say news in quotations, we're a community paper. You know, it's like we're like the West Ender or like the Courier, but we're only online. So mm-hmm. Anyways, I think it's a shrewd move on their part to bring us on and to work to continue with the papers as well. Yeah.
And so do you work mainly with the Courier, or do you work with, say, their other titles?
I don't work with the Courier at all. So, like, the way that it works is, so in our building there's the West Ender Business in Vancouver, the Courier, REW.ca, and, you know, we're all running independent things. Mm-hmm. The Courier's working on their print deadline. They're posting news stories. They do, you know, maybe 50% of stuff just goes online.
So you just share the building with them, right?
Yeah. And the resources, and, you know, I'm in on meetings with them. We have shared sales teams. Management is always, you know, meeting and discussing and talking strategy and trying to figure out how to best work together as well, cross-posting stories. So you'll see, you actually start to see it now, Vancouver's Awesome stories on the Courier's website and on the West Ender's website and vice versa.
But what about the other things like the North Shore News, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Do you work with them? Will you have, say, a presence in that community with this brand?
Not so much. No.
No. So it's still Vancouver. It'll still be Vancouver, right?
Yeah.
It won't be like West Van is Awesome or something like that, or Burnaby
Not yet.
Is Awesome.
Not yet.
Yeah. This goes to a lot of criticism that you've had because there are people that like you, obviously, and there are people that don't like you.
Sure.
And no one's ambivalent about Bob Kronbauer. when you've been criticized, you have fought back because some of the stuff has been nonsense in your opinion, right? And incorrect but I've always thought that you haven't defended yourself enough.
Huh.
I remember there was one time when you were in the crosshairs over something, and I remember emailing you that day, and selfishly I thought you should come on this program and talk about it because I'd afford you the time to talk about it and I'd ask you questions about it. And you chose not to, and probably smart on your part. But I don't think you've done that enough.
Well, I think there's a time to tell people to go fuck themselves and a time to just put your head down and keep working, you know? And I think most of the time I choose the latter.
But don't you think, though, that a lot of people will, well, I don't know, if someone in the press takes exception to you and says something about you that is incorrect, that a lot of people, a lot of the readers, say, will think that about you?
I don't know that people are publishing hatchet jobs on me that the general public is seeing as much as people maybe just want to talk amongst themselves and chatter and privately air their grievances.
Did you wonder why you're such a target?
Maybe my model's a bit disruptive and I take no shit.
Yeah, and I think it probably worries them about their own place.
Sure.
And their own
like
work,
back to your question about, you know, is Vancouver's Awesome being bought by Glacier mean the end of print media in 65 markets that they have papers in? No. Will it change what they're doing? I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think people misunderstood what Vancouver's Awesome was? They assumed that it was only supposed to be a blog and not a commercial enterprise?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is when I started it too, it started as a side project that was never meant to make money. Explicitly, I told my wife, I was like, I'm an entrepreneur. I've been in media for 20 years. This is just, I'm just throwing this at the wall. This one's just going to be for fun. It's just going to be an outlet. And then when it started to take up more of my day, it was like, okay, let's figure out how to make this work and turn it into a business. So it actually wasn't ever meant to be a business.
And I guess a lot of people probably felt that they were misled by that, thinking that it was, you know, this love letter to the city, and so they bought into it, and then they didn't think that it was going to be a commercial enterprise.
I mean, in my
and
eyes,
they probably resented the fact that you're making an income from it, right?
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of that everywhere. But I think that, you know, if you can't accept that something evolves, it's not going to be a love letter off the side of a guy's desk if you actually want it to be around for more than a year.
Could you have imagined what it's become after 10 years? I mean, 10 years ago?
Hell no. It's crazy. I get that question a lot, too. It's like, did you picture it ever being like this? And it's like, no. It's been a wild ride, and I feel like it's just begun now that we're at Glacier, and it's a different beast, and I have these resources to grow it and evolve it even more is amazing. And actually, just yesterday, speaking of news, we just got a CP feed, so now we're on. We're doing Canadian press stories. So, to speak of people thinking that it might be something that it's not, right now it's like we're trying to figure out, hey, how do we deliver actual news that's not just puppy dogs and rainbows, but keeps people aware of what's going on in their city and not just in quotations super awesome stuff.
Yeah, and the work that you do. This lifestyle publication. I mean, there's competition in the city now.
Sure, yeah. They've been around as long as we've been around.
So it has been 10 years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's just. I mean, it's evolved. I mean, they've evolved and they've changed their name too and things like that. I guess the people still will go online for stuff, right? And that won't change.
I don't see it changing.
In the era of fake news and all that, I mean, it's still going to continue?
Yeah. Why wouldn't it?
Yeah. What do you think the city is a more fun city today than it was 10 years ago?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
I think that it really changed. Like, when I started it, I just moved back from LA and I was like, yay, it's so great here. I love it here. I love being able to live here. And No Fun City was a big thing that was happening, a big sort of
elections were run on that, right?
Who?
Well, I think both sides, I guess, yeah. Blame the other for it being what it was.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was sort of the spark that lit the fire. And it was like sort of hitting back on that. Like, it's actually awesome. You know, the city is awesome. And I think it changed. I think the sentiment changed a lot during and after the Olympics. You know, now it's like people love it here. And, and now the hashtag No Fun City is now the affordability crisis, which is, I'm not going to push back on that because that's reality. There's no two ways about that. I definitely disagreed with No Fun City because the city was fun, but
and it's become more fun, right?
Yeah, totally.
At what point did you realize that? I mean, you mentioned that you'd lived elsewhere. The reasons that brought you back to Vancouver. I mean, because you were born here, you were raised here. You lived in LA, working there. What brought you back? Was that
I was working in an office for a few years, and I had left the office, and I was just freelancing there, and I started to look around at my home office, and I was like, man, I wish I could do this from Vancouver, because after you live in LA for a few years as a Canadian anyways, all the stereotypes sort of start to become true, and things look a little differently, especially when you don't have a circle of friends like you do in an office atmosphere. I just felt kind of isolated, and I started thinking, wow, I wish I could do this same job from Vancouver. And, you know, I was freelance, so I had this light bulb moment, like, duh, I can. And so I did.
And I guess the technology, I mean, you could not have done that 20 years ago.
Oh, no.
It was just the right time,
it's
wasn't
funny.
It? 10 years ago?
Yeah. It's that's around the time that it's shifted, for sure.
Yeah. The other sad thing that I was watching your segments was that even though you were raised here, you never went to Expo.
No. Isn't that sad?
It is. I was watching that the other night, and I was like, I feel bad for Bob, because Expo is such a part of people's lives that grew up here. I mean, I was 4 at the time, but, you know, I still remember going there. I can't remember how many times I went there, maybe a couple times, maybe more, because we had relatives come in from elsewhere. But it's such a, you know, I mean, and then the nostalgia of it, because we were 30 years just last year. I guess we started commemorating it 5 years ago, when it was the 25th anniversary. You know, you look at the buildings downtown, you know, it's the Expo look.
I have this nostalgia, this like secondhand nostalgia of it, because I was 10 and I grew up in Vernon, and my parents were like, okay, we can either go to Disneyland or you can go to Expo. And we're like, no question. Like, we're going to Disneyland, and it was like the one trip that my parents ever took us on, because we grew up pretty poor. And that was the choice that we made. And I mean, I collect all the Expo stuff. I got to hug Expo Ernie for the segment. I feel like I've got as close to getting there without actually going there.
Yeah. And that's the thing people say, well, how can you be nostalgic about something that you didn't know or that you were too young for? But you can.
Right? That's the thing, too.
Like, and that's the keen interest in history that you have. And
yeah. I think back on BCTV and all the news coverage and everything in the newspapers and, you know, stuff that I was surrounded with in a small town, the front page of the province newspaper. You know, like, I wasn't there, but it was around.
Yeah. And so you've been doing a bit of looking in the archive over at Glacier.
Oh, my goodness.
On Twitter.
I stumbled upon the morgue of a paper called The East Ender, which I didn't know existed. And a couple people in the office were like, what is The East Ender? So I guess it was the equivalent to The West Ender. It's a little spicier.
Yeah.
It's a little the first headline that I saw was something like, hookers up in arms over something. The vernacular that's used to describe people is not as PC as you would imagine. And the ads are just amazing. And I'm digging through it. I'm actually going to – I started a thread on Twitter, and I'm going to add to it as I dig through all these amazing pages from 1986 East Ender.
Yeah, that's the thing about the Courier, is that their archive is not as searchable as it should be. And I'm wondering, because you're in the online business – is that something you're going to push them to say maybe improve on?
Oh, like scan all their past issues or
what?
Yeah,
because I mean, I remember I used to have Mark Hasek on the show when he worked at the Courier, and you know, he described it as the paper of record. And if you think about it, the Courier is that because of its coverage of City Hall and events in the community. I mean, this is stuff that you would not see in the Sun and or the province that I think. There's a lot of history there that the Courier, the Echo, the East Ender, the old West Ender issues as well, that I think could have a life online.
Yeah. I heard that there might not be physical copies of the old Couriers, but I will do some digging and get back to you on that.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to see you again, and I appreciate you coming in to do this and for this chat, and I can't wait for the rest of BC Was Awesome.
Well, thank you for not being ambivalent.
I guess, you know, fingers crossed for third season.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
Take care.
VancouverIsAwesome.com is the website, of course, and @BobKronbauer is the Twitter handle. Bob Kronbauer joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.